GearOutfitter.com.
Veteran NPR reporter Margot Adler will be at the Roe Camp and Conference Center this weekend to present a retreat for women entitled Moving Toward Joy. Adler has been coming to Roe for close to 30 years, bringing ritual, song, and laughter, a philosophy of joy even in the face of uncertainty and doubt. She says this retreat for women will use the tools of ritual, singing, and the consciousness-raising techniques of the 70s to explore unfolding new journeys. It's a great pleasure to welcome Margot Adler to the roundtable this morning. Margot, thank you very much for being with us. A great thrill to have you on the program.
It's a pleasure.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you've been coming to Roe for close to 30 years. What brought you to this place all those years ago?
You know, I'm not actually even sure how I first got to Roe. I had been beginning to do sort of workshops on women's spirituality and ritual and paganism, and somehow I got to Roe, and once I got there, it's such a beautiful place, and I just loved all the people there, and Doug and Prue and all those people that I just, you know, it was just very exciting to be there.
As I mentioned, the retreat is entitled Moving Toward Joy, and it is a retreat for women. What is it about that you think captures so many people in the sense of that they're searching for that joy?
Well, I think we're living in a very, very difficult time right now, not only economically, but I think that a lot of women are feeling a lot of transition, senses of transition. I know in my own life I've gone through some fairly painful and difficult events. My husband died 2.5 years ago. I had to deal with endometrial cancer, a lot of other stuff. And so the question is, how do you maintain a kind of glass half full attitude in the face of that? And I think that often we have to sort of take a deep breath and use some of the sort of ancient traditions of song and breath and gesture and meditation and other kinds of things to kind of let us sort of say, well, what's really happening with us right now? And I think that very often we can move to a place where we suddenly see the beauties of life and stuff like that more easily if we do that.
Given that in recent years you've had to face cancer and grieving of your husband, did you have the tools in your toolkit, given the years that you've been practicing this, that helped you get through it? Or was there, again, a process of learning and development and sort of reapplying those skills?
Well, I mean, I've been dealing with some and looking at those skills and playing with those skills probably since 1972 or something like that. You know, I think most of us very often live, and I do too, in a world where even though we may have it in our toolkit, we don't always take them out and use them at the appropriate times.
Right.
And very often, particularly in the workaday world, it kind of, you know, you're walking, particularly I live in the middle of Manhattan, you know, I'm walking in the world of concrete. It's not like I'm, even though I'm walking through Central Park every day, I don't often notice what's around me and see what's around me. I mean, I think I was lucky in my own life, and this is probably, you know, not something you can sort of teach other people, but I was an only child, very much used to being alone, and sort of a survivor, you know, and I think that stood me in good stead, you know, no matter what tragedies came along. It was kind of like, I was going to make this no matter what, you know, but I think that didn't necessarily gave me the tools to survive, but it didn't necessarily give me the tools to be happy about it. And I think that takes a while. And I think that, you know, for me, song has always been, I don't know, a pathway to joy. I've been a sort of frustrated singer. I started out in voice, actually, at the High School of Music and Art. I was someone who kind of always loved camp songs, kind of wanted to be a Girl Scout and never was, kind of always sort of looked at myself as kind of a minstrel, and yet, and then sort of let it all go. You know, once I was in college, I stopped belonging to choirs, I stopped belonging to madrigal groups, and probably, on the other hand, went into radio, which I guess I do use my voice there, but I certainly didn't use song in the way that I suddenly went back to it and said, well, maybe there's something about chanting. Maybe there's something about harmony. Maybe there's something about rounds. And so I've sort of brought music back into my life through this ritual kind of way of being, and it's kind of taken me back to where I was in my childhood, I think.
So talk a little bit about the use of these tools of ritual and singing and rounds and these consciousness-raising techniques that ultimately lead or can lead to joy.
Well, I think that very often we are not at our highest self. Let's put it that way. I think very often in our lives we allow all kinds of things to muddle the way we need to get through. I'll tell you a very funny story, which is a real public radio story, since you work for public radio. But I think a lot of us who work for public radio, you know, it's not like we're the kind of people who can ask for money. So when I was when I got my first job in public radio, and not my first job, I was first at Pacifica, but my first NPR job, I was told by someone very high up in the organization that when I go in to negotiate for my salary, that I should basically, that they would offer me, that they would say 20 and I should say 25 and that we would finally agree on 23. And that's what I should do. And I walked into this thing being just my normal, ordinary, not very conscious self. And I walked in there and they said 20 and I said, sure. And I think that very much that's who I was, as someone who works for public radio, and that's who I've always been. So about 10 years after this, after I was looking, using some of these meditation tools, I was suddenly in another situation which was very similar to that. And so I said, okay, I'm going to write the word Athena on my blotter. And I'm going to think of myself for a few moments. I'm going to meditate and draw into myself the power of that archetype, of that strong, positive, female, warrior-like woman. And when I go into my negotiations for salary, I'm not going to be the Margot who always says sure and always wants everyone to love me at every moment. I'm going to walk in feeling, for a moment, maybe only for an hour, but I'm going to go in feeling like I'm Athena, right?
Right.
And so I walked into that thing. I literally spent 20 minutes just kind of drawing that energy into myself and thinking that's who I want to be and that's who I'm going to be in that moment. And when I got to the negotiation, I actually fought for what I wanted. And about 2 hours later, I was just my ordinary, normal, you know, sort of yucky self again. But it was a technique that actually worked. And I think sometimes, this is just an example, I think there's a lot of tools out there to sort of use breath and gesture and pulling affirmations into yourself that essentially allow you to be larger than you normally are as you're walking down the street.
You talk about this of just how powerful breathing can be, of how we breathe.
Mm-hmm. I think that very often, first of all, we forget to breathe.
Right.
It's one of the most powerful things that we, one of the most powerful things. And I think that the minute you just sort of stop and take a breath and let it out, that you basically start seeing things in perspective. You basically are, you start disengaging from the kind of emotional reality, the other kinds of realities around you, and you allow yourself to step back and see the world perhaps more in a more real sense. It's a very simple thing to just take a breath.
What was it like for you in telling people about your beliefs and sharing that to go public with being a Wiccan priestess and telling your story in an autobiography? Of what was that experience like for you, and how ultimately, was it challenging at all?
Well, it was definitely challenging, but later. I mean, the truth was that when I wrote my book, it came out right as I was leaving Pacifica, where you could be anything you wanted to be, because
right.
It was such a crazy radical station, and going to NPR. So when I started my job at NPR, I had already published my book that said that I was a Wiccan priestess, so I couldn't put the toothpaste back in the tube. So it was out there. And for the first, I would say, number of years that I was there, people were a little antsy. I mean, I would say I could count on my fingers the number of people in, you know, 30 years who actually came up to me and said, hey, what is this Wicca stuff, this pagan stuff you're involved in? Let's go have a cup of coffee. It was not that the Wicca stuff was as much a problem as just the idea of talking about spirituality, I think, makes people very uncomfortable. And there were people who didn't want me to do stories that had to do with religion. There were times when I was up for a host job where I think basically NPR thought, it's one thing to be a reporter where you talk in the third person. It's another thing to sort of represent the company as an eye of the host. I think that, you know, they were very antsy about that. But, you know, it's now been 33 years, and if they're not going to be comfortable, I don't know when they are. You know, I think basically I've been there for so long that I think it's perfectly reasonable to them at this point.
But it does seem, and if you don't wish to go down this road, I certainly understand, but it does seem, having been here, not at NPR, but working with NPR for a long time, that they do tend to overreact sometimes over things like that, of being overly concerned about personal issues and how they affect the work that we do.
They clearly are very sensitive to political stuff.
Right.
I mean, you have to sign these incredible, you have to basically abide by these incredible ethical guidelines. You can't sign a petition. You can't go on a demonstration. You can't, you know, wear a political button. You know, you can't give money to a candidate, all those things. And in a way, I was very lucky because this book, which has political implications, at least environmental implications, my book, came out before all this. And so, again, you couldn't put that back. And so sort of, there's like a religious exception, you know, to this. And, you know, as long as I keep my nose clean on the other things, it sort of has not really been a problem. And I think that now one of the problems that NPR has is the Internet. Because I think before the Internet, it was much more possible to have a private life and to do whatever you wanted to do. And as long as what you did didn't get in, you know, didn't get in on the AP or in the New York Times or the Washington Post or whatever, no one cared. Now everything is so public that you have to be sort of squeaky clean about everything. And so I think now it's harder for all of us to have an interesting private life.
Do you see it any different than if a reporter identifies himself as Christian or as Catholic or as Jewish or as Muslim, than it would that you are Wiccan?
Well, I think it was. I mean, I used to joke that they had a problem with me, but Cokie Roberts could cover the Pope, you know?
Right.
You know, in other words, you could be a Catholic and cover the Pope, but you couldn't be a Wiccan and cover Wicca, you know? But so I think in the beginning, yes, there was a real difference that this was considered odd, you know, outre, out of there, you know, an outlier kind of religion, not a real religion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think that has really tamed down a bit as paganism and women's spirituality and all of that has become more in the mainstream, you know, now that there are pentacles on headstones at Arlington Cemetery, now that there is a peer-reviewed academic journal. Now, you know, it's a little easier to talk about this stuff, and it doesn't only come up on Halloween. And so I think that as there have been now charity drives, and you can occasionally see a sign on the highway saying, you know, this stretch of highway is being paid for by, you know, the Coven of Avalon or something. I mean, these all things are happening now. You know, that's all part of reality. I think people are a little more comfortable.
Veteran NPR reporter Margo Adler will be at the Roe Camp and Conference Center this weekend to present a retreat for women entitled Moving Toward Joy. You can find out more information about the retreat by going to Roe Center, that's R-O-W-E, roecenter.org. Margo Adler, a thrill to speak to you. Thank you very much for being so nice and doing this again. We had some technical issues the first time around. I thank you very much for doing this again, and we look forward to having you in the region.
It was a pleasure. I hope it was even half as good as the last one, which I really loved.
Me too. It was great. Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. Again, you can find out more information by going to roecenter.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.